Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. While she was in the middle of caring for her sick husband, Patty Morelli received another piece of earth-shattering information. She had stage 4 lung cancer. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Morelli describes her treatment process, how she dealt with her husband's death, and how she leaned on herself to keep going.
Well, I would love if you could start by telling me about your life prior to your diagnosis.
Prior to my diagnosis. Okay. I'm a mom of 3 children. I was working my whole life doing various jobs. So it was everything and anything I did as a mom. And in 2008, my husband had a massive stroke, leaving him partially paralyzed. So I was his caretaker for 12 years. So when my husband had his stroke, I moved to Florida. I used to live in New Jersey. I moved to Florida and I moved here in 2017. And in 2019, I was diagnosed with cancer. It was crazy because I had no symptoms at all. I had a flu in May. I had like some type of virus in May and I went to a walk-in clinic. I didn't have a doctor here. And I waited 2 hours to see someone. And then after that, I said, you know, I want to get a doctor. So I just made an appointment and they were going to give me one appointment close to my house in September. And I chose one that was in the next town for July. So I told her I was a past smoker and I had something in my thyroid in the past. So she ordered 4 tests, which were CT of my lung, ultrasound of my throat, bone density, and mammography. And I went for those tests on Thursday night at 5:00. And at 11:30, the office called me and said that my bone density came back bad. Would I want to go on medicine or would I want to come in to see the doctor? I said, no, I said, I'll just go on the medicine. No problem. An hour later, they called me back and they said, we need you to come into the office. All right. Phenomenal doctor. She was with Martin County Cleveland Clinic. And I had all 4 tests at 5:00 and the next day at 12:30. I went to see her at 5:00 on Friday, and she had my PET scan scheduled for Monday, my oncologist appointment for Tuesday, and my biopsy for Thursday. So it was amazing. There was she didn't even ask me, are you working? Can you do this? It was, you're going. You need all of this done. And when I met the oncologist, he was with Stewart Oncology. His name was Dr. Devine, very young man. He was an Army doctor. In my children's experience, they said he didn't have a lot of experience, telling me that I needed to see people with more credentials. So when I started getting my biopsies and everything, they went to Sloan Kettering, MD Anderson, Sylvester in Miami, and Stewart Oncology. The markers were done to see if I was a candidate for immunotherapy. So I was very lucky. There were 3 markers they were looking for. The first one I didn't have. I don't know what that has to do with what it was. And the second one I was a candidate for. But I did get 2 different opinions. So the doctor in Sylvester wanted to do chemotherapy and immunotherapy together. I'm sorry, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer and it metastasized. And when I went to that doctor and he wanted that, and basically they gave me a year to 18 months because of where it metastasized to. And when I went to my doctor, he knew I wasn't crazy about chemotherapy. You know, my age, I've seen so many of my friends pass away and deteriorate away. And I said, if I'm going to die, I don't want to deteriorate. I don't want it. So my doctor said, why don't we just try the immunotherapy first? Not kill the good cells. You know, apparently I had not one symptom. He said, so let's try the immunotherapy and see. So when he examined me the first time, he felt all the lymph nodes in my neck and in my chest. And he kept saying, did you feel these? And I said, yeah, but when we get older, we get these little white spots all over that fill up with little pimples, I call them. And apparently they were cancer nodes or whatever they were. And I was trying to pick them thinking they were pimples and they weren't. He goes, no, you don't pick these. And one was right here, you know, and he put a port in me. He put the port in me before he knew I was a candidate. He didn't want my veins to collapse because a lot of friends I've known through the years, their veins collapse. When they try to get the treatment, they can't find the vein. So the port does help. So that's my one recommendation to many people. Don't be afraid. It'll go away. You could wear a shirt. Nobody will see it. It's not a big thing to have, but you don't want to not be able to get treatment because they can't find a good vein, you know? So I went with him And within 3 weeks, he didn't feel any lymph nodes in my neck at all. And by the time the 3 months came and we did another scan, it stopped the cancer from growing. So it was supposed to be my time of my life, my husband having the stroke. It was a very hard time for me because besides going for treatment, I was thinking I was dying. So I had to worry about him and put him in independent living because he lost his speech and he was paralyzed on the right side. So I needed him to be taken care of. So it was the first year was a really rough year, not knowing, then my husband passed away last July. So that made it all hard and COVID hit. So it was a mess. But at that time, my treatment was in a room facing the water. While you're sitting there getting treatment, you're watching the boats go by. It was very calming and relaxing. And then when COVID hit, I looked at the pier down below. And then I started going for a walk after my treatments, put myself in a nice frame of mind. And then when the restaurants opened again, I found myself at this restaurant, very exclusive restaurant called the Boathouse. And I was the only one there. And it was such a nice, like I owned the whole place. It was beautiful.
Right. And it like makes you feel better, I'm sure. And you treat yourself to a nice lunch after that.
I didn't deteriorate, chemo. I didn't lose my hair. So that's the greatest thing about immunotherapy. You do have a lot of, different side effects, but it's not as bad as chemo. Sitting in a room with people all around you and you see them deteriorating, mentally, it's very hard for you, And I would make sure I put my makeup on every day, get dressed nice. I wasn't going to be wearing my sweatpants or gym clothes or pajamas. I wanted to still feel like I don't want anybody to know that I was sick, and that's basically how I feel now. Even when people talk about it, I don't like saying it, call it cancer mode, because what happens, people just automatically tell you about the illnesses once they know you have something, mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't do this anymore. I want to be alive. I want to live. I'm doing what I have to do, but the days that I feel well, I don't want to discuss it,
Right. And I'm sure you had that element of wanting to keep who you were and are as a person as well. You didn't want to lose yourself to
feel like you're indestructible. At least I did, because I did so much in my life. And everybody's like, I garden, I call it my therapy. I have a beautiful garden outside. And I planted my last plant when the doctor called that day. So I call it my healing garden. And I would go out there and just putz around. Even if I didn't feel well, I just go out in the garden. I could always come in the house and go to sleep. But at least I made myself do something, and watching the flowers bloom, it just mentally, it's really mental. A lot of this has to do with mental. And what I think what bothers me the most in the 2 years that I have cancer, I've heard about 6 different people that were diagnosed maybe stage 2, stage 3, not as bad as stage 4. And a lot of doctors are not just doing immunotherapy. And that's the part that's bothering me a lot. They're combining it with the chemo without giving immunotherapy a chance to work on its own. And I've lost 4 people in this past 2 years from it. So I know doctors, I feel like maybe because my doctor was young and didn't have all those credentials, he's like, this is new, let's try it. Let's see if it works. And if you have somebody who has all those credentials, they may have a certain way of treating people and don't want to switch over. I don't know, but I wish more people would know about immunotherapy. I had one friend in Arizona who was diagnosed what I had, stage 4, and no immunotherapy was offered to him. I made him change doctors. I went on Arizona's site for cancer centers. I made him change. And then when he saw the doctor, they didn't take enough in the biopsy to send it to Foundation. So that's the other problem. And I heard that from 3 different people, that they didn't get enough for the biopsy to see if they were even a candidate for immunotherapy. So I feel bad because I know this drug is out there and could probably help a lot of people. But if the doctors aren't getting the right biopsy within the right time frame, they're starting them on chemo. And if I feel like chemo, when you're at stage 4 already, I don't know if stage 4 chemo is really helping you at stage 4 when it metastasized already.
Did you experience any side effects from it?
I had dizziness, joint pain. It was like a little battle in your body. You could watch your veins. It's a little strange. You could watch your veins go up. You get a pain and you can watch your vein and it goes up. So it's basically, I think it's the medicine fighting the cancer and you just feel it inside of you. But it wasn't anything. I stayed away from driving when I had dizziness, and I slept a lot, more fatigue. I would say fatigue.
You mentioned, but we didn't go into too much detail about the fact that you were a caregiver at that time. So what was kind of that process like? Because I know you have children, on top of having to almost have a loved one for you as well, you had to relinquish some of your duties as a caregiver for your husband.
All I did was cry. I'll cry now because he died. So I did all this. I took him for 12 years. And then this happened and I had to worry about him being taken care of. So it was expensive. And I just felt if I was going to die, I knew he was taken care of by someone, you know. And then COVID hit. And then I had to get another caretaker in to take care. I was going there doing his laundry when I could do his laundry, his shopping, put everything away. And then when COVID hit, I couldn't go any longer. And then I had to pay somebody. So the stress of that, how I survived it all, that's how I say to myself, I just don't know how I survived that year. It was a horrible year, you know? Yeah. So I stay positive till I think of him. And then he died alone, you know? And if I didn't take care of him for 12 years, it would have been okay. But they took care of him all that time. And I had to divorce him also because of laws and stuff like that. Because he was a vet and I have an income. He wanted to qualify for VA benefits. 13 years ago in 2008, he had the stroke. I had to file bankruptcy, foreclosure, built my whole life up, moved here to Florida. And then to learn that if I die, my daughters don't get anything and my husband gets everything, who's disabled, and his daughter would get, who didn't see her father for 12 years. So in my mind, it was just so much going on with legalities and him being taken care of. We have a son together, you know. So I had to put everything into my son's name so I knew he would be taken care of. It's sad that you have to get to this stage of your life and you have to do all of this, you know. And then when he died, I'm down as divorced. It really wasn't, you know, but the legalities and all that, I really had no choice. So that's the problem of life, that the government, whatever this is, it's just horrible, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was my hardest part of trying to understand. The dying part, like, I wasn't that upset. I think I was more upset over him because it was who was going to take care of him. If I go, I had a great life, you know, I had a great life, I had a big crazy life, you know, but I really lived my life, you know. It wasn't that I did nothing. I had three children, I have two grandchildren. So I did, if God's going to take me, I believe in God. And if that's his calling for me, then that's his calling for me. That's basically, and my children were mad at me for even thinking that way. I said, but everybody has a time clock in this world. You know, we don't know when it's going to end. And if you are alive, then you need to live. And that's one thing I've always done. I've never been a depressed person. I've always pushed through things, whatever came at me. I failed 12 years ago. My husband had a stroke on 2008. That was worse than hearing the news of me with cancer because I didn't know what I was doing, you know, losing my home. I have to take this man with me. And like, I didn't know what I was going to do. So dying didn't seem as that bad. It was just like, okay, all right, we're done.
With a lot of patients, they just get overwhelmed by their diagnosis, but then you're overwhelmed by, you want to make sure that your loved ones are taken care of, and you wanted to make sure he was taken care of. You wanted to make sure.
It's more your children, like that. Yeah. You know, children want you around, and your grandchildren. So you don't want to look at them and say, Nana's going to be okay if you die. You don't want to say that to them, but right. If you are going through it, you do feel that way, you know? And if I was to deteriorate and have my children see me in pain for the last year of my life, I didn't want that. So I was one who did not want to have chemo. I didn't want to deteriorate in front of them. So I was real adamant about that. And thank God that I was adamant about it because for me, it did work. You know, I'm cancer free right now. And it's amazing. And everybody says to me, oh, you're like a walking miracle. And it's not that I am, it's the immunotherapy. And I really want to be a spokesman for it, of how great it is. And people need to know about it, you know, and get a second opinion. If your doctor's not offering it to you, get someone else and find out. And then when they say, let's do chemo and immunotherapy, why do we have to do the chemo? Can we just try the drug on your own? In 3 weeks, he noticed my lymph nodes were gone. So if you can get, I think there's I don't know if it's better now, but 2 years ago, it was almost a 3-week delay of the biopsy coming back to see if I was a candidate. I don't know if that's changed. I hope that was speedier because if somebody is in critical, if they can get the immunotherapy in them faster, I think it would save more lives too. You know, I really do.
How would you say your life has changed since, you know, pre-diagnosis to now where you're cancer-free? Like, how do you feel different as a person?
Based I feel on like I'm taking baby steps to live again. That's actually what it is because I didn't want to meet people. If I wasn't going to be around, it stays in the back of your mind. You know, you stay with the friends that you know. I was great and had a wonderful support system of my old friends, even though they weren't close. And I met some very nice friends in my neighborhood that I moved into 4 years ago. So they were very supportive of me, but I didn't want to go out and make new friends. So my treatment was 2 Mondays ago, my last treatment, and I got involved in just local politics here. And I just did a fundraiser, helped with the fundraiser, which I wouldn't have done. And I'm glad now I can get involved again. And it wasn't just the cancer, it was my life before with my husband. But those years, I really couldn't do much. So I'm just starting to live again, taking baby steps towards like, who am I? Am I healthy? I'm not thinking anything negative. You know, I'm trying, and I don't want to talk about cancer with people. You know, I don't mind speaking when I hear somebody has cancer. Mm-hmm. I'll help them. I'll get on the phone and tell them what they need to do, who they need to see. That I'll do. But I don't want to go out and say, hey, I have cancer. He'll look at my port, you know, or, you know, I had one friend who had cancer and liked walking around bald and getting all the attention. Everybody's different when they get it, how they feel about it. Some people feel like they're survivors and they're very proud of the fact. And I'm more to myself, like it's something, it's a person. Everything to me, it's a personal matter. How you handle it, how you move forward. It's really moving forward now, because no matter how you say, okay, I know I'm fine, it's still in the back of your mind that you're not, you know, going to come back tomorrow and where it comes back. You know, it's one thing coming back. But so that was my biggest thing when we went off my treatment, because only 3 months ago, something came in my right lung and I thought I'd have to stay on the medicine. And when we went for my next scan, it was done. So the way he explained it to me is that the Keytruda or the immunotherapy teaches my immune system to fight cancer. So you don't have to stay on the medicine. So it's 50-50, 50% it's new. 50% of people have not gotten cancer back at all. 50% have. 50% who stay on the medicine, it can attack your other organs. So it was more like a gamble, like, what do I do? And I said, you know what? If it did teach my system to fight the cancer, then I'm going to go with that one, give my body a break from the medicine, and I can go back on it. So you hear all these rumors and you don't know. And they tell you, if you go off Keytruda, you can't go back on it, but I can. So if it does come back, then I just go on the medicine again, which is not that bad, you know?
So then when were you officially declared cancer free?
The 2nd of September.
Oh, so it was very recent. It was this month.
Yeah, well, I was cancer-free up until, sorry, my husband died on July 2nd. It was my appointment was somewhere in July last year where they told me I was cancer-free then. So I went a whole year almost cancer-free. And then it came back in my right lung, which I didn't have before a new cancer came. So when I got this last scan, I was cancer-free. It wasn't in my system.
What would you say you learned about yourself during this time that you didn't necessarily know prior?
Basically, you can live through everything, you know, like just move forward.
Right. And then what kind of keeps you going now? What are the hobbies or passions that you have that just keep you moving forward?
My gardening is definitely my gardening. That keeps me going every day. It's all flowers. It's all kinds of flowers. I have probably 40 different types of flowers in my yard. I think I had 12 different types of butterflies this year in my garden. Every day I look for them, and I have the zebra ones that I get about 12 of them every day. But I like when I could look, I try to find different plants that bring. So I have one plant that brings a yellow butterfly, one plant that brings the monarch, the regular ones we all know. And then I have the zebra ones. I think they're called swallowtail. I don't know the names of them, mm-hmm. but it's just something. It's a hobby now. And I just love it. And I want to do bird watching, because there's a lot of nature trails by me. And in next month is when the birds all start coming to Florida. So I want to see if I can get some pictures of the birds and stuff, just nature. And I believe nature heals you. I really do. Like just going out, getting yourself out of the house, if it's just taking a walk. And I remember years ago, I had a therapist who said, don't look for a happy day. Just look for a happy moment in the day. And if you go to sleep at night, don't have all your worries upon you and think about how bad your day was. Think of that one happy moment of the one thing that made you smile today. And it's really funny, but it really does work. If you think of the one, because you don't realize within a day, something will make you smile. If it's a person telling you a joke, something you see, and it's much better mentally when you can smile going to sleep at night, you know?
Who or what did you really rely on during that tough season of your life?
I had my children who were there, but I'm not one that really likes people to be around me. If I'm sick, mm-hmm. I want to stay in bed. And I feel funny if somebody's sitting there. I had, in the beginning, my daughter came with me for treatment, my sister-in-law, and they're just sitting there for the hour. And I said, I'm fine. I'm not getting sick. I can drive home. I'm fine. And they, you know, it wasn't, people weren't there. I had a lot of people there. I had one girlfriend who lives upstate New York. She flew down within 2 days. My ex-sister-in-law flew down within 2 days. I mean, people were there for me. It's just me. I feel like sometimes you get weaker when people are around you and helping you. You'll stay in bed. You'll have them bring you food. And then if you don't have anyone here, it forces you to get up and do stuff.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.